Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Thursday, August the 7th.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. Just started the recorder at the moment. So what I want from you, because I'm going to write some of this down, because I haven't been here for 2 weeks, is a list of topics. And the recorder's running, so I will just, we're going to have a different kind of conversation. I just want you guys to talk about this. But what's top of mind, Jackie, for you?
I would have to say how many of the acres are at or above trend line, both on corn and beans, the whole Ukrainian and Russian thing. Of course, the guesses for the USDA report.
Right.
And Argentina.
Yeah. How about you, Mike?
Weather and, what the trade's factored in, gone into the report, and probably the trip report I just filed, crop report I just filed when I went up to western Michigan and central Michigan and then back down to Ohio and back across to Atchison and kind of matching up with what Jackie was talking about, what acres are above trend line and not.
And from your perspective, Matt?
Well, I think it's an interesting mix. The acres that are above trend line, I agree with both Mike and Jack. How far are they above trend line? Obviously, we've got some pretty unique situations throughout the Corn Belt where yields will probably be benchmarks for some time. Maybe not on just farms, but, in downshift counties and maybe even the state of Illinois. I think weather in August is going to have a huge impact. A lot of guys were looking for that dry weather for a while, and, it doesn't look like it's materializing for everyone by any means.
Right. Same with the El Nino, right? Now they're talking that El Nino may not show up, and that was the big thing that everybody was just counting on, that El Nino was going to be here, and it was going to cause all the problems that we were concerned about, and just doesn't seem to be showing up.
End users seem like they're getting a little bit, probably to me and the contacts I've spoken with, I'd be interested in what Matt and Jackie have to say, is the end users at this stage of the game are maybe the most nervous they've been all year between Putin and this weather, as far as whether they need to flip from just-in-time, hand-to-mouth, mm-hmm. to getting a little bit more secured.
Well, we've, last week, on Wednesday, we got called by one of the bigger people that we deal with, and they wanted 100,000 between Thursday and Friday, and they came and picked it up. That's been going on all year. It's just been amazing for a pretty big crop that we've had. We've got quick ship bids. And obviously no one's even thinking about picking corn in August. You've got a first half and last half bid on both corn and bean. So I agree with what you're saying, Mike. I mean, there's some nervousness out there. I think there are regions, obviously, where they've had some weather issues. I mean, I've seen some crops in my travels that don't look very good at all. Now you get in Illinois and it's like the Garden of Eden. Around my hometown, I mean, we've got some corn that I've never seen corn like it, it's not all going to be like that, but we've got some areas where it's just really, really good.
Hey,
yeah.
Did you all see the pictures that Goodell sent out from his tour earlier? The northern Illinois stuff did not look
It doesn't. Yeah, I was just up there.
What did it look like?
The beans are shorter. There's no question about that. The population on corn is really good, but you see a lot of rolling corn, a lot of ocean lake, high, low, high, low, high, low. You can tell they just had extremely heavy, heavy rains. I think another thing we need to talk about is the rail situation and basis and the impact that it may have. I mean, I don't know if you guys know it, but Decatur was out of corn again this last week.
Mm-hmm. No, I hadn't heard that.
Yep. Just can't get rail capacity to bring it in.
Yellow corn above 24 is what I saw most, Todd, and people are starting to call in more about that, where they're saying, if I miss more rains, that record crop's dropping quickly. Mm. So north of 24 seemed to be kind of a dividing line for me in Illinois and Indiana, and then 30, as you got across, you know, when you went across Fort Wayne, and then you got into 30, U.S. 30, that seemed to be where the yellow corn really stuck out. A lot of nitrogen deficiency.
Hold on, where's Route 24 in Illinois? Where's
comes right across from Gilman.
Yeah, like Chenoa.
Oh, gotcha.
Chenoa, El Paso, that area,
Okay, I don't know.
The only thing that I would say, Mike, is, you know, take a look at what corn looked like last year.
I know, and that's the tough one. Is you got 158.8 nationally last year, and can you do literally 15% better than that across the whole country?
Well, and you know, you talk to the states out on the East Coast. You know, Pennsylvania, they've just got a gigantic crop coming on. Also, I talked to Louisiana this past week. Louisiana normally 150 to 160. They right now are figuring about 200, and it's just because of the fact that we've had much cooler weather even down there.
Wow.
I mean, where we're at, you know, this summer's weather is very similar to last summer's weather. And then you can factor in the fact that we've had a lot of rain in July and August. I mean, last summer we didn't get squat for rain in July and August.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had, you know, depending on the farm, between 3 and 5 inches. And so you've had cool nights similar to last year. This year we got an even earlier start. Now, not every place is like that by any means, but I was in Indiana last week, and we went in South Bend on 57 and over on 80, and, you know, the farther north I got, there was a lot of holes and a lot of, places where there was nitrogen deficiency, and then I drove south out of South Bend and came back over and ended up on Route 36 and came over, and some fields look really good in places, and then there was areas I'd drive for quite a while before I saw really good corn.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's definitely some areas. Obviously, the phenomenal yields are going to be in some places, but I'm not sure they're going to drag up all of the tough spots, to get to some of the national yields that I've seen. I'm not sure I'm buying into it to that extent.
All right, so I think, and this is right, that everybody has been, or had been at least up until this point, hanging their hat on Illinois being phenomenal, that this was the state for the corn yields just to be phenomenal and to drag everything up. Earlier in the week, Gary Schnitke wrote a note, and you're shaking your head?
I'm saying no. They just not are hanging their hat on Illinois being phenomenal. They're hanging their hat on big parts of Indiana being phenomenal, big parts of Iowa being phenomenal. So it's just not just hanging here. It's hanging across this central section that goes all the way through here from Iowa all the way into Indiana.
Primary corn belt from Des Moines all the way
to
Fort Wayne.
Yep.
Right? Okay. But let's deal with Illinois just a bit. Did you see the tweet from Gary Schnitke? He's at G. Schnitke on Twitter earlier in the week. About the average crop yield in Illinois, compared it to 2004, which was the highest yield we've had in the state, 180 bushels statewide in 2004. If we were that far above trend line, and I haven't talked to Gary, I think this is right, we'd be at 200 bushels to the acre. He said he didn't think that the weather would support that. So what does the weather in Illinois support? What's the statewide yield? And we've got crop production coming up, so we'll have some numbers. Anybody got a guess?
Well, I don't think it's going to be hard to hit 190.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where I'm at, between 190 and 192. I do see that that Schnitke's comments were, on the Reuters pretty heavily about 2 weeks ago when he was a special guest, and he talked about that 210 yield level. And 200 to 210, and he did qualify it that he doubted the weather would allow that, but it seemed like a lot of people ran with that, and I guess that's where I'm at, is I'm trying to figure out where the market's got this priced in, and at 350 September corn last week, I think you're darn near a 2.2 billion bushel carryover going into next week's report. So that's kind of my benchmark at this point, using Illinois as the high measuring stick.
It'll be interesting. USDA actually had us, I think, at 193, and I think it's possible. I mean, when you look at the population out across this whole section, and we were over to the other side of the state too, and I mean, the population is amazing, especially with two cobs on a stalk and how many of the agronomists that are out there actually walk in fields and walk in large portions of fields and coming back and pushing 300. Now, if you even have, I don't know what the percentage has to be of fields pulling out 300 or 280. How much does it take, or how long does it take to be able to pull this back up across the whole U.S. or make up for the probably 2 million acres we're going to lose up in the northern part?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's why the higher yields are somewhat realistic, because I think we're going to take out probably at least 2 million acres up in the northern section of the U.S. And you immediately raise the average yield by that, you know, just by the fact that they have much lower yields than anybody else does. So take out the lower end, it raises it higher. So we're going to get some of that kick anyway if we do lose some of those acres. Although, I'll tell you, I've been talking to people in South Dakota. They're saying North Dakota, they planted. That's what they're saying. They're saying they planted. So maybe we're not going to lose the 2 million acres. I don't know.
You know, I think with the state of Illinois, you're looking at without a doubt, I mean, highest all-time yield. And I think, speaking, it's going to be an eye-opener. I know whenever you start, I agree with what Jackie's saying, there's going to be some fields that are going to probably open some eyes. I know everyone's not going to have that. And I think even a lot of guys that have been out in their fields are kind of shaking their head, wondering if it's really going to come to pass. They don't want to get their hopes up, but they are saying, I haven't seen corn like this before. And so, you know, I think statewide in Illinois, I'm going to be, you know, safely in the 190s. I mean, it's tough to say, but a couple weeks ago I had a person ask me what I thought the statewide yield would be, and I said I just didn't think we could get to 200, but I certainly wouldn't mind throwing a 195 out there. I know that there's some problem areas in the state, but I think there's some corn that is good enough to make up for some of those areas. And then, you know, nationally, I think that it's going to be interesting. That 170 benchmark is probably fairly close to what I'm thinking right now. You know, I think that while Illinois is really, really good, I've talked to so many guys across Corn Belt that we're not in the same boat. And so I hate to get too far above that, but I do think the USDA is probably going to come in, over 170. I don't know how far, but maybe 171, 172.
Yeah. The final is going to be affected, too, I think, by at least around this area. And a lot of guys that I've talked with, too, they're flying on so much fungicide. I'm shocked. You know, when you're looking at $22 to $30 an acre to put that stuff on. But what you hear from everybody is the same thing. You know, we got to make sure that this corn is as strong as it possibly can to support all the weight it's going to support off these cobs if we actually do come to, you know. And the minute you put fungicide on, you immediately help yield in most cases, you know, because you keep the plant healthier. So I don't know, you know, I know that it's going on here a great deal. I know I've talked to other guys, even some guys in Minnesota, which is kind of surprising because those are the guys that are below trend line. Basically, Kentucky and Minnesota are the only two states out of the 18 that are below trend line.
So next question, and I think, Matt, you gave us this topic rail. And the situation. So, if we have this crop, and we do at this point, how bad does the rail get clogged up? Because we have an enormous crop that needs to be moved, and we don't have the trains, I don't think, to move it all that quickly. And how much does basis fade because of that? And am I on the right track or not?
Oh, I think you're on the right track. I think, you know, as a producer, a person has to stop and think, you know, what their needs are for this fall, because I know there's definitely going to be a lot of cash needs this fall. And so, you know, you got to ask yourself, what's the basis going to do, especially, you know, if I'm in an area where I know we're looking at a heavy corn crop, basis is certainly not going to get better as harvest goes on. And so a guy needs to keep that in the back of his mind. But how's the rail system going to handle this? I think whenever you look at what last year's crop was, and then you want to go ahead and increase our crop size, a fair amount, and in certain areas, significantly increase the size of the crop. it's going to really strain the system. And I think some of the areas in the upper Midwest that have had a hard time getting stuff railed out, I don't think that, unfortunately, that things are going to improve for them, you know, dramatically at all. Because I know a lot of people, you know, in Illinois that I know of have booked a fair amount of trains in the last half of September, first half of October time frame because they realize they're just not going to have room.
What does this all mean for how low is at this point? I think, Mike, you mentioned, well, I don't know. Mike, are we down on the lows at this point? Is there much more bottom? You're thinking a 2.2 billion bushel carryout.
Is what the market's factored in, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the idea by the trade that this USDA report could blow the doors off of the supply side. And what I mean by that, Todd, is that there's talk in Chicago, and it's by credible people, that they're ready and willing and able to accept above 175 national yield at this stage, and that we're heading towards a 2.5 billion bushel corn crop ending stocks number. So, I mean, in that respect, no, we haven't gone down low enough to factor that in. I think to try and tie into what Matt and Jackie were talking about and what you were asking about with the basis, it looks like that, you know, Champagne right now is about 15 under for new crop. And by, you know, in December, if you have, you know, off the combine's more like 27 to 30 under, but if you have on-farm storage and that crop's going to be that big, then that December basis is more than likely going to double, and it's going to be probably more like 30 under, and you're going to feel pressure in these very high supply production areas in the eastern Corn Belt and central Corn Belt that many western Corn Belt producers feel when it comes to basis if the production number is that high. So I think right now you have to get ready, tying into what Matt said, get more beans sold off the combine, so or more beans sold, you know, right after you get started so that you can make more room for corn. And, you know, tying into what the U of I and Daryl Good was talking about, look at that idea of selling the carry, look at the idea of getting March puts bought, you know, somewhere down the line, and you know, look at it from that perspective, and maybe for off the combine corn sales, look at if you get any kind of price spikes, try and set your basis, and then within 30 or 60 days of setting that basis, if you can get a rebuttal or push back up and rejection of the lows to back up towards that gap in December corn around 415, move into the future side of those basis contracts. Don't let those basis contracts sit there, though. That's very dangerous. So that's kind of the things that I'm thinking about, depending on what the USDA gives us next week. And I really do think that this could be the biggest yield that we could see because of what Jackie was talking about when it comes to the ear count. And the idea that maybe we won't fill out as well and we will have some tip back if these rains don't come, and the trade will try and see that coming after this August number comes out. The bigger this number is, the harder it's probably going to get any bigger. That's how I see it right now.
Yep, and what we've been doing is basically for the last 3 weeks setting basis on HTAs, setting basis on bushels covered by puts, you know, just getting prepared. And when you hear that producers all across the U.S. basically are buying white bags to put corn into because they think they're going to force the commercial to have to pay them more, that's not a smart decision in that respect. I mean, buying the bags is not the easiest thing. When I had the feed mill, we did it. You better have it at the right moisture if you're going to put it in there. And that means it's either got to be above 28% moisture or it's got to be dead dry. And dead dry is not easy because those units really are not built for dead dry corn, you know. And so it's
so you're saying it's not right because for a technical issue, not that you shouldn't store it, but
it's hard to store in bags. I'm not saying you shouldn't store it. All I'm saying is it's not the know-all end-all that you might be being sold on, and it takes time also. You know, and the problem you've got is you really have to be careful. If you don't have enough moisture in them, you can blow the side out of a bag so easily. I've seen so many of them happen. And I think the rail thing that we were just talking about is huge for us, and it's also huge. Think about North Dakota. North Dakota had areas of cash of, what, $1.92 a few weeks ago. They haven't moved their old crop. Where's their new crop going? You know, the overall picture here just doesn't paint well. And I think that, you know, just like everything else, when you look at the futures always go too low or lower than they should, and they always go higher than they should. So I don't see any reason for us not to go back to the 2009 December low of 302. I think it can happen. I think you got a lot of guys that are going to say, no way, it's not going to ever happen. But the trade doesn't care. And, you know, if you looked at hogs today, just look at hogs and what fund liquidation is doing to hogs. We have a lot of outside money in these markets. So I think, you know, producers just have to have themselves prepared.
Okay, Matt, on the storage issue, how do you go about using your on-farm storage? Do you fill it first? Or do you go across the scale first?
Well, if anybody's got any corn hedged, either to go to the elevator on a fall delivery sale or they've got it protected and they can deliver it, I would certainly be delivering it first because I think once harvest really gets to rolling, it's going to slow you down. I would try to save on-farm storage until you really needed it, or maybe even you just use it here and there to be able to get as many acres done as what you can. Because I think, you know, if you're solely delivering to the elevator this fall, there could be some days where you don't get a whole lot done, especially the farther in the fall that we get. I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be ground piles, but, you know, a lot of guys like to try to avoid that. But like we've all been saying, you know, the rail system's only going to be able to do so much. And so most of these elevators, I think, you know, the second to third week of harvest in some of these areas are going to already be in a situation that they're running out of room.
Hey, wait a second. Am misinterpreting this, but are you of a mind that you don't necessarily want to have corn in the bin longer term? You might use it as short-term storage, but you want to move it out, and do you want to re-own it then, or did I just get you wrong?
No, what I'm saying is I want to deliver to the elevator first,
right?
Because I'm thinking that storage is going to be an issue, and then I want to use my on-farm storage, especially on bushels that are not protected.
You're just saying if I'm in, I'm going to deliver to the so that I have storage space at the elevator. I'm going to deliver there first in order because first in, first use, right?
And it's more of a logistical thing as well, because I know a lot of guys. As you know, once we get started, most guys are ready to be done. You know, I mean, you get started and you want to get after it as hard as you can. And bottom line is a lot of elevators are going to have a really hard time. I mean, in an area where the corn is really good, if you've got five or six guys picking, you know, 230 or 40 bushel corn, it doesn't take very many more guys and you've got lines long, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's going to be a real test of the system. And it's going to give, everyone plenty of work to do this fall.
Okay, different topic. Mr. Putin, Ukraine. He said, thank you for the sanctions. We don't need your food. I guess that's mostly a poultry issue in the United States. But I don't know. What kind of problem does it create, Mike? You usually look at these things much more globally.
Well, and if there's anybody still listening from our bearish talk, I think this is where the sun brightens up quite a bit. I think that if you put these two things together, what we just got done talking about and how big the Illinois corn crop can be and the cash problems can be, and you look at what Vladimir Putin has as up the ante, I think it really opens up the idea that there's going to be some type of retaliation by the European Union, i.e. we don't want your agricultural products and we're going to get it from other sources, and they may explore that. I think the more likely scenario is that Putin probably comes in and takes out the Ukraine and invades and takes over the Black Sea, and essentially we have a big question mark in the trade of whether all that grain sitting there in the Black Sea is available to the world market for a time. And if you add that to the technicals that look very, very strong, the weekly charts are giving a buy signal, some of the commodity index charts are trying to give a buy signal for the first time since February, March, I think you have standing in your way essentially from a short covering rally potential here is that USDA number next week, and that's how important it is, along with this rain system coming through between now and the end of the weekend. But the Russians have to be very careful, because it wasn't long ago, it was earlier this year, that they did not take some pork from someone, and their food prices spiked, Todd, and it spiked to the point where there was a lot of blowback from the people, and the pork price especially is very sensitive to their overall CPI, their consumer price index. And so, yeah, they can get away with not taking meat in the small quantities that we would supply them, or some of the other countries would supply them. But they kind of got to be careful, because he could really throw himself back to where the country moves against him and his poll ratings go down if he lets food price inflation spike again. So that's kind of my take on it at this point.
Wait, so if I'm hearing you right and I'm putting this together in my head, he throws up sanctions, says nothing coming in. He's got potential revolutionary side in Russia because people get upset about food prices. He's got to take Ukraine.
Well, that's
right?
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly
is,
right.
Is that what you is that what you were saying?
That is exactly right.
Because where the food is.
To me, it's a chess game. That's exactly right. That's where the natural gas is, as far as the pipeline, and that's exactly where the food is. And so, if he's going to take this to the end, knowing that he does want the Ukraine and always has wanted the Ukraine, that's where I think it's honestly a situation where the trade probably doesn't have enough geopolitical premium in the market at this point. I mean, I think it's worth mentioning, because, you know, of the negativity in this market right now, that we have less U.S. wheat ending stocks than we did back in 2010. We have less world wheat stocks than we had in 2010. The former Soviet Union has less ending stocks than it had back in 2010, yet we're at 2010 prices, and it's all because of coarse grains and corn. So that's how linked these two are at this stage. So if the corn crop would happen to be disappointing in the USDA report, and the technicals are friendly, and all of a sudden Putin wants to ramp up and invade Ukraine, you have a different look to this market pretty much immediately.
It's interesting when you look at the big picture. I found some statistics on it. They said we're the eighth largest supplier to Russia for food. We sold them $1.54 billion worth of food last year. Ukraine supplied them with $1.99 billion worth of food. And you were right on, Todd. You know, the biggest thing they take from us is poultry, but they also take nuts. They take soybeans, live cattle, regular food preparation stuff. I don't know what that is. Fish, apples, sunflower seeds, and swine meat and hog meat besides. Those are the top 10 things that come from us. You know, you mentioned the EU, Mike. That's a whole different story, because, boy, I'll tell you, they have a huge thing riding on this, because they have cheese, they have swine, and you're talking $1.3 billion. They sell them liquor, they sell them apples. They have like 15 major groups that they actually supply to them, and I think you're right that he wants to do this. The question comes down to, can he actually pull it off?
Well, Germany gets, 40%, I think I saw that, of their energy.
Yeah, their natural gas.
Their natural gas?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah,
yes.
So they got to be really careful. I can't imagine that they're really excited about going head-to-head.
Germany
with,
came in
even
today.
Even with NATO behind them.
No, but Germany came in today and shot down Russia on something that Russia wanted to do with Germany. So it's a chess game on all sides, not just on one.
It's an ugly one we'll have to watch. Switch topics. Soybeans. This is a crop we're still waiting on. Matt, you've been in the field. It looks good, at least at this point, but we've got a long time yet, I suppose, for the beans.
Yeah, definitely. August is the month of the beans, and most guys have been fairly happy, you know, whenever they've gotten out and looked at their beans. You know, there's been a lot of very good pods fed. I think that if we would have a wet August, I think in a lot of areas the bean crop would be very good. You know, I don't know, relatively speaking, it's not going to be anything outlandish in areas like corn crop, but I do think the bean crop would be very solid. And if you take, you know, 84.8 planted acres, and you tack that onto a 46 or 47 yield, which some, you know, are suggesting can happen with the right weather, that's a big bean crop.
It really is, you know. And the big question in my mind, and I'm sure both of you guys are wondering the same thing, is were all the double crop beans that are being planted in Nebraska and Kansas actually planned on when they did the June acreage report? Is that where the 84.8 came from, or are we looking at more acres out there? Because when you talk to the guys, I mean, they've planted a lot of beans. Granted, you know, they're not going to have as high a yield, so they'll drag the national yield down somewhat, but will it add acres is the big question.
Mike?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, the bean market is a lot easier to play right now because of the other factors around it. You know, we talked about the corn storage issues. We talked about the uncertainty of the northern corn crop. I mean, when I was in Michigan, not that it's a big state, but it's, I think, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, or in northern Illinois and tip of northern Indiana are all in the same boat, Todd. A freeze in September would do a lot of damage to corn and beans. So when I look at the bean market, you've had, essentially since the July report, a channel top at 1120. You've had a channel bottom at 1055. And a gap right around 1130 to 1132. So my take is don't let the 1055 close below occur after the report next week. If you do ramp up on sales, you're still profitable at that price level. And keep in the back of your mind that if beans do happen to rally, A, you can always defend your sale, and B, it's going to make it that much more appealing for South America to increase their acreage. And so beans, to me, are still easier to sell for a variety of reasons, and it's really the corn that's going to be a lot more difficult to work with because of its attachment to wheat and this supply issue that we've been talking about.
Is everybody in agreement that they want to sell beans earlier rather than later? For two reasons, maybe. One, because prices are not terribly bad. You can still make money on them. And two, you might need the storage for the corn. Is that right?
Well, I think...
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have been a seller of beans for quite some time, and I still am. I think most of my producers are feeling, you know, pretty good about their bean crop and that they're going to have a good one. And that $10 plus out of the field, they're definitely making money, as Mike suggested. And so, you know, where there's storage concerns, I by all means would be selling the beans that I needed to sell to feel better about that. And you know, I don't know that I want to speculate on beans rallying a whole lot. Going into the report, I think most of my guys are feeling pretty comfortable with where they're at, but I know there's still a few guys trying to figure out what they're going to do, and it's tough for me not to make a recommendation to sell when I know they're profitable.
Right, and I mean, we've been a seller of beans for a long time, too, for the very same reasons. And I think we have to recognize, you know, it's pretty widely held that unless we actually take the futures below $10, that we're going to see expansion of bean acres down in South America. And then when you look at Argentina and what's going on, you know, with their default situation, those farmers are going to be, they're going to sit on those beans, but they're also going to plant more beans because they're not going to have as much money to be able to put into crops. And it costs more to plant corn down there. So I think it's interesting with Argentina, once we get to the first of the year, you know, there's a clause in this default as far as their overall money goes that says that if you pay one bondholder something, you have to pay all bondholders the same thing. It expires on December 31st. So after the first of the year, they can negotiate with the individual bondholders, and then that may change their economy around a great deal. And at that point in time, that's when I'd be concerned that we might see the Argentinian farmers who've been sitting on an immense amount of beans start to dump them onto the marketplace.
Any other topics we did not discuss that are on your list that you want to make sure that we talked about today? Anybody have anything else?
I would only suggest that there are some things happening out there in the outside markets. The S&P is testing levels not seen since April. The VIX is jumping to levels to the upside. For the first time, it's, you know, rallied to levels not seen since January. And I guess it kind of smells like there is something in terms of money movement getting ready to happen if it's not already happening, Todd. And that's probably something that may not mean much as we go into this August report, but I think it has a huge bearing as we get into the third quarter, especially or the end of the second quarter. So that's something I'd be watching.
Yep, I couldn't agree with you more, Mike. And when you talk about the VIX, if people don't know, you know, that's an index, a volatility index that actually gives you an idea of what the investor nervousness is. And Mike's right on. It has jumped up a great deal. Even though we keep getting these economic numbers that maybe look pretty nice on the surface, the investor's not that comfortable. And so I think anytime you see a Dow Jones up above 17,000 and you take like a 300-point hit, you know that there's going to be money flow that's going to come out of our markets. And so if something does indeed come about, we could see a lot of money flow just move out of our markets, just like it's moving out of Hogs, not because anything's changed fundamentally for us, but just because it is pure money flow, and that's where what makes the market today.
USDA.
I think the only other thing I'd like to throw in is I know we talked about weather a little bit, and I think that it's very important across the Corn Belt to see what this weather does in August, because if we do have a big bean yield on top of that acreage, then it's going to be really tough in the long run to rally a corn market, for instance, next spring if we're worried about acreage. If we've taken beans clear down under $10, it's going to cap what kind of a rally we can get in the corn market. So I've been telling guys, you know, and however badly it sounds, you know, maybe the thing we need to be hoping for is that the August weather isn't completely ideal, because maybe it'll keep beans from just being dead on arrival.
I wrote 2015 down, but decided not to ask you all about next year's sales. And since you opened that can up, why don't you start, Matt?
Yeah, for 2015, we've been pretty heavily sold on beans for quite some time, and had a fair amount of corn sales on. I still am very willing to sell beans for 2015 because, again, going back to the profitability standpoint, I can be profitable there. And then, you know, a producer needs to realize, obviously, that if something happens, I think, as Mike alluded to earlier, there's ways we can play from the long side, you know, to protect, to hedge our hedge, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely the truth. We've been doing 2015 corn and beans. We've got some guys that are actually even 85% covered on the board. No cash sales, just all using put strategies. And on beans, we're about 40% covered. And so, you know, I just keep talking to guys and saying, hey, you know, we lost a dollar on crop insurance this year, $1.03 over last year. What's to say if we have a gigantic crop? And risk management is all about what's to say. It's all about thinking about what could possibly happen that could have an impact. We can always change strategies if we need to. But if you haven't taken care of yourself, you're in trouble. What if we lose another $1.03? It could happen. We'd be in the 359 level. That doesn't pencil with a lot of the rent that's out here and things like that. So I think you have to be proactive and you have to manage that risk. And the only way you can do it is either using the cash market or shifting it to paper. That's about all you can do.
Michael?
Yeah, we've got zero done on the corn for 15 and 25% done on the Nove beans for 15. Short futures, and then we've got a bought 14 call against that for this August weather, and looking to lift that call if it's not in the money after the August report. So that's kind of the plan I had at this point, Todd, with the idea that the wheat market's still about a dollar too cheap, and that makes the corn about 50 cents too cheap when you look at all the factors that I look at on my desk. So that's kind of where I'm at this point.
And one of the things, Mike, I'm glad you made that remark about the call. One of the things I think that all of our listeners and should recognize, we have what we call short-dated calls, okay, so and puts. So let's say that you sold the futures and then you got nervous because it looked as if things were going to change. You could come back in and buy a short-dated option, and a short-dated means that it actually trades against. It's based on the December corn futures. It's based on the November bean futures. And so you can actually fix your risk is what you can do. That's how you can change your strategy if you need to change your strategy. And we also have weekly options, which a lot of people don't use, that are really valuable for going into major reports like we're headed into this next week.
Okay, so here's the list of things that are happening next week on Tuesday, 11 a.m. USDA releases the August crop production report. That's the first real set of numbers we get for this year's crop. There will be both survey and hard numbers in that report. We also get WASDE figures that day, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, and that'll tell us what ending stocks are. Tune in on Tuesday afternoon for the closing market report. You can hear all about those, and you can see those numbers, of course, on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Thursday morning of next week, this one's not related to the market exactly, but if you want to come to the U of I, to the South Farms, that's near near the State Farm Center, the Assembly Hall. Just to the east of it on St. Mary's Road, I'll be emceeing the U of I's Agronomy Day event. That starts at 7 a.m., runs to 2 p.m. in the afternoon, but 7 to noon, really. And if you want to get out in the field and take a look at what the folks like our ag agronomist Emerson Napsiger are up to, what they're learning about research as it's related to the Western corn rootworm and how it's reacting in recent years with BT corn, you can do that. That's all out there on Agronomy Day. Again, Thursday morning next week, 7 a.m. on the South Farms. Hope to see you there. Thursday night, I will be with Matt Bennett. Matt, are we in Shelbyville? Is that right? Do you know?
Yeah.
And do you know what time? I haven't seen that yet. Is that 6:30?
I believe 6:30.
Yeah, 6:30. And which building are we at?
I think the Lions Club.
The Lions Club in Shelbyville. And it'll be Matt Bennett, myself, and I think maybe Gary Schnittke. I haven't talked to him exactly. So if you want to come to that, you'll hear more about that during the week next week, or you can find that on our website too at willag.org. You can follow us all on the website. I think everybody has a Twitter account if you want to follow us individually. My handle is at Commodity Week if you're on Twitter. There are a lot of farmers that use Twitter. It's really a pretty good place to see good information, but you have to weed it out because there's a lot of bad information too. Let's see, Matt, you are at Chief123, correct?
321.
Oh, 321. Yeah, at Chief321. I should have known that. 321, Medicaid, yeah. At Chief321 is Matt. And Jackie, yours is at?
At JVakes.
At JVakes, and it's V-O-E-K-S. So it looks like Vokes, but it's V-O-E-K-S, JVakes. And Michael, I don't remember yours off the top of my head.
At Zeus, Z-E-U-S. Hoyo, like the cigar, H-O-Y-O.
Yeah, Zeus Hoyo. Yeah, so there you go. So you can follow us all on Twitter. I think it's a really good place to be. One other item, not next week, but the following week. The following week is the Pro Farmer Crop Production Tour. We always keep track of that. I'll be talking to Chip Flory at 10:20 a.m., and we'll post everything that's coming from the Twitter feeds into our website, so you don't have to have an account. I'll take care of making sure that you can see that at willag.org. So I'm going to put a Twitter feed list, relatively speaking, up on our website. You can just go there at willag.org, and anything that comes up from the Pro Farmer Crop Tour should show up there, including all of the pictures that they'll be taking. And there's a lot of stuff that happens, and we'll talk to Chip at 10:20 a.m. every morning. I'll drop that out on my Twitter feed, and then, of course, it'll show up on the closing market report in the afternoon. I think that's everything. What'd y'all think of the way we did Commodity Week today? What'd you guys think?
It was great.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect, but I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it very much.
This is kind of the way I'd like to do things. The problem is having to do it on Thursday instead, because I can't do this during the week on Friday afternoon. I can't quite do it because we can just talk. So we're 42 minutes in.
Yeah. And will we still have a guest normally or not, Todd?
I think I normally, I think I'd like to have a guest, but at 42 minutes, we can have a guest, absolutely.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Absolutely. But it means, and so I'm still debating on how to do Commodity Week, but this is what I've always wanted to happen, which is to take that, for those people who listen off air or on the online, and I'm still recording, to get Commodity Week to this point, where it's just a roundtable kind of discussion with me giving some input as to where we go, but you guys having a real discussion about the marketplace. So I hope everybody enjoys it. If you do, you can actually just email me. Let me know what you think. My email address is tgleason@illinois.edu, or just put Todd Gleason in Google. I'm the first one that comes up. There are a couple of others, but I'm number one, baby. At least a lot of the time I am. So, okay. Hey, guys, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.